This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Shadows of Self by Brandon Sanderson. Read for you by Michael Kramer. Prologue. Waxillium Ladrian, lawman for hire, swung off his horse and turned to face the saloon.
"Oh," the kid said, hopping down from his own horse, "you didn't catch a spur on the stirrup and trip."
"That happened once," Waxillium said.
"Yeah, but it was super funny."
"Stay with the horses," Waxillium said, tossing the kid his reins. "Don't tie up Destroyer. I might need her."
"Sure."
"And don't steal anything." The kid, round-faced and 17, with barely a hint of stubble on his face despite weeks of trying, nodded with a solemn expression.
"I promise I won't swipe nothing of yours, Wax."
Waxillium sighed. "That's not what I said."
"But..."
"Just stay with the horses and try not to talk to anyone." Waxillium shook his head, pushing into the saloon, feeling a spring in his step. He was filling his metal mine a smidge, decreasing his weight by about 10%. Common practice for him these days, ever since he'd run out of stored weight during one of his first bounty hunts a few months back. The saloon, of course, was dirty. Practically everything out here in the roughs was dusty, worn, or broken. 5 years out here, and he still wasn't used to that. True, he'd spent most of those 5 years trying to make a living as a clerk, moving farther and farther from population centers in an effort to avoid getting recognized. But in the roughs, even the larger population centers were dirtier than those back in Ellendale. And here, on the fringes of populated lands, dirty didn't even begin to describe life. The men he passed in the saloon sat slumped low to their tables, hardly looking up. That was another thing about the roughs. Both plants and people were more prickly, and they grew lower to the ground. Even the fan-like acacias, which did stretch high at times, had this fortified, hardy sense about them. He scanned the room, hands on hips, hoping he'd draw attention. He didn't, which nagged at him. Why wear a fine city suit with a lavender cravat if nobody was going to notice? At least they weren't snickering like those in the last saloon. Hand on his gun, Waxillium sauntered up to the bar. The barkeep was a tall man who looked to have some terrace blood in him, from that willowy build, though his refined cousins in the basin would be horrified to see him chewing on a greasy chicken leg with one hand while serving a mug with the other. Waxillium tried not to be nauseated. The local notion of hygiene was another thing he wasn't yet accustomed to. Out here, the fastidious ones were those who remembered to wipe their hands on their trousers between picking their nose and shaking your hand. Waxillium waited, then waited some more, then cleared his throat. Finally, the barkeep lumbered over to him.
"Yeah?"
"I'm looking for a man," Waxillium said under his breath. "Goes by the name of Granite Joe."
"Don't know him," the barkeep said.
"Don't... He's only the single most notorious outlaw in these parts."
"Don't know him."
"But
it's safer to not know men like Joe," the barkeep said, then took a bite of his chicken leg. "But I have a friend."
"That's surprising." The barkeep glared at him.
"Ahem," Waxillium said. "Sorry. Continue." "My friend might be willing to know people that others won't. It will take a little time to get him. You'll pay?"
"I'm a lawman," Waxillium said. "I do what I do in the name of justice." The barkeep blinked. Slowly, deliberately, as if it required conscious effort.
"So, you'll pay?"
"Yes, I'll pay," Waxillium said with a sigh, mentally counting what he'd already spent hunting Granite Joe. He couldn't afford to go in the hole again. Destroyer needed a new saddle, and Waxillium went through suits frightfully quick out here.
"Good,"
the barkeep said, gesturing for Waxillium to follow. They wove through the room, around tables and past the pianoforte, which sat beside one of the pillars, between two tables. It didn't look like it had been played in ages, and someone had set a row of dirty mugs on it. Next to the stairs, they entered a small room. It smelled dusty.
"Wait,"
the barkeep said, then shut the door and left. Waxillium folded his arms, eyeing the room's lone chair. The white paint was flaking and peeling. He didn't doubt that if he sat down, he'd end up with half of it stuck to his trousers. He was growing more comfortable with the people of the Roughs, if not their particular habits. These few months chasing bounties had shown him that there were good men and women out here, mixed among the rest. Yet they all had this stubborn fatalism about them. They didn't trust authority, and often shunned lawmen, even if it meant letting a man like Granite Joe continue to ravage and plunder. Without the bounties set by the railroad and mining companies, nothing would ever... The window shook. Waxillium stopped, then grabbed the gun at his side and burned steel. The metal created a sharp warmth within him, like the feeling after drinking something too hot. Blue lines sprang up, pointing from his chest toward nearby sources of metal, several of which were just outside the shuttered window. Others pointed downward. This saloon had a basement, which was unusual out in the Roughs. He could push on those lines if he needed to, shoving on the metal they connected to. For now, he just watched as a small rod slipped between the window casements, then lifted, raising the latch that held them closed. The window rattled, then swung open. A young woman in dark trousers hopped in, rifle in one hand. Lean, with a squarish face, she carried an unlit cigar in her teeth and looked vaguely familiar to Waxillium. She stood up, apparently satisfied, then turned to close the window. As she did, she saw him for the first time. "Hell," she said, scrambling backward, dropping her cigar, raising her rifle. Waxillium raised his own gun and prepared his allomancy, wishing he'd found a way to protect himself from bullets. He could push on metal, yes, but he wasn't fast enough to stop gunfire unless he pushed on the gun before the trigger was pulled. "Hey," the woman said, looking through the rifle sights. "Aren't you that guy? The one who killed Perret the Black?"
"Waxillium Ladrian," he said. "Lawman for hire."
"You're kidding. That's how you introduce yourself?"
"Sure. Why not?" She didn't answer, instead looking away from her rifle, studying him for a few moments. Finally she said,
"A cravat? Really?"
"It's kind of my thing," Waxillium said. "The gentleman bounty hunter."
"Why would a bounty hunter need a thing in the first place?"
"It's important to have a reputation," Waxillium said, raising his chin. "The outlaws all have them. People have heard of men like Granite Joe from one side of the Roughs to the other. Why shouldn't I do the same?"
"Because it paints a target on your head."
"Worth the danger," Waxillium said. "But speaking of targets," he waved his gun, then nodded toward hers.
"You're after the bounty on Joe," she said.
"Sure am. You too?"
She nodded.
"Split it,"
Waxillium said. She sighed, but lowered her rifle.
"Fine. The one who shoots him gets a double portion, though. I was planning to bring him in alive."
"Good. Gives me a better chance of killing him first." She grinned at him, slipping over to the door.
"The name's Lessie. Granite is in here somewhere, then? Have you seen him?"
"No, I haven't," Waxillium said, joining her at the door. "I asked the barkeep, and he sent me in here."
She turned on him.
"You asked the barkeep?"
"Sure," Waxillium said. "I've read the stories. Barkeeps know everything, and..." "You're shaking your head."
"Everyone in this saloon belongs to Joe, Mr. Cravat," Lessie said. "Hell, half the people in this town belong to him." "You asked the barkeep?"
"I believe we've established that."
"Rust." She cracked the door and looked out. "How in ruin's name did you take down Perret the Black?"
"Surely it's not that bad. Everyone in the bar can't..." He trailed off as he peeked out the door. The tall barkeep hadn't run off to fetch anyone. No, he was out in the taproom of the saloon, gesturing toward the side room's door and urging the assembled thugs and miscreants to stand up and arm themselves. They looked hesitant, and some were gesturing angrily, but more than a few had guns out.
"Damn,"
Lessie whispered.
"Back out the way you came in?" Waxillium asked.
Her response was to slip the door closed with the utmost care, then shove him aside and scramble toward the window. She grabbed the windowsill to step out, but gunfire cracked nearby and wood chips exploded off the sill. Lessie cursed and dropped to the floor. Waxillium dove down beside her.
"Sharpshooter," he hissed.
"Are you always this observant, Mr. Cravat?"
"No, only when I'm being shot at."
He peeked up over the lip of the windowsill, but there were a dozen places nearby where the shooter could be hiding.
"This is a problem. There's that razor-sharp power of observation again."
Lessie quilled across the floor toward the door.
"I meant in more ways than one," Waxillium said, crossing the floor in a crouch. "How did they have time to get a sharpshooter into position? They must have known that I was going to show up today. This whole place could be a trap."
Lessie cursed softly as he reached the door and cracked it open again. The thugs were arguing quietly and gesturing toward the door.
"They're taking me seriously," Waxillium said.
"Ha! The reputation is working. You see that? They're frightened." "Congratulations," she said. "Do you think they'll give me a reward if I shoot you?"
"We need to get upstairs," Waxillium said, eyeing a stairwell just outside their door.
"What good will that do?"
"Well, for one thing, all the armed people who want to kill us are down here. I'd rather be somewhere else, and those stairs will be easier to defend than this room. Besides, we might find a window on the other side of the building and escape."
"Yeah, if you want to jump two stories."
Jumping wasn't a problem for a coin shot. Waxillium could push off a dropped piece of metal as they fell, slowing himself and landing safely. He was also a ferrochemist, and could use his metal mines to reduce his weight far more than he was doing now, shaving it down until he practically floated. However, Waxillium's abilities weren't widely known, and he wanted to keep it that way. He'd heard the stories of his miraculous survivals and liked the air of mystery around them. There was speculation that he was metal-born, sure, but so long as people didn't know exactly what he could do, he'd have an edge.
"Look, I'm going to run for the steps," he said to the woman. "If you want to stay down here and fight your way out, great. You'll provide an ideal distraction for me."
She glanced at him, then grinned.
"Fine. We'll do it your way. But if we get shot, you owe me a drink."
There is something familiar about her, Waxillium thought. He nodded, counted softly to three, then burst out of the door and leveled his gun at the nearest thug. The man jumped back as Waxillium shot three times, and missed. His bullets hit the pianoforte instead, sounding a discordant note with each impact. Lessie scrambled out behind him and went for the stairs. The motley collection of thugs leveled weapons with cries of surprise. Waxillium swung his gun back, out of the way of his allomancy, and shoved lightly on the blue lines pointing from him toward the men in the room. They opened fire, but his push had nudged their guns enough to spoil their aim. Waxillium followed Lessie up the steps, fleeing the storm of gunfire.
"Holy hell," Lessie said as they reached the first landing. "We're alive."
She looked back at him, cheeks flushed. Something clicked like a lock in Waxillium's mind.
"I have met you before," he said.
"No, you haven't," she said, looking away. "Let's keep—"
"The weeping bull," Waxillium said. "The dancing girl."
"Oh, God beyond," she said, leading the way up the stairs. "You remember."
"I knew you were faking.
Even Rusko wouldn't hire someone that uncoordinated, no matter how pretty her legs are."
"Can we go jump out a window now, please?"
she said, checking the top floor for signs of thugs.
"Why were you there? Chasing a bounty?"
"Yeah, kind of."
"And you really didn't know they were going to make you—"
"This conversation is done."
They stepped out onto the top floor, and Waxillium waited a moment until the shadow on the wall announced someone following them upstairs. He fired once at the thug who appeared there, missing again, but driving the man back. He heard cursing and arguing below. Granite Joe might own the men in this saloon, but they weren't overly loyal. The first few up the steps would almost certainly get shot, and none would be eager to take the risk. That would buy Waxillium some time. Lessie pushed into a room, passing an empty bed with a pair of boots beside it. She threw open the window, which was on the opposite side of the building from the sharpshooter. The town of Weathering spread before them, a lonely collection of shops and homes, hunkered down as if waiting, in vain, for the day when the railroad would stretch its fingers this far. In the middle distance, beyond the humble buildings, a few giraffes browsed lazily, the only sign of animal life in the vast plain. The drop out the window was straight down, no roof to climb onto. Lessie regarded the ground warily. Waxillium shoved his fingers in his mouth and whistled sharply. Nothing happened. He whistled again.
"What the hell are you doing?" Lessie demanded.
"Calling my horse," Waxillium said, then whistled again. "We can hop down into the saddle and ride away." She stared at him.
"You're serious?"
"Sure I am. We've been practicing." A lone figure walked out onto the street below, the kid who had been following Waxillium.
"Wax," the kid called up. "Destroyer's just standing there, drinking."
"Hell," Waxillium said.
Lessie looked at him.
"You named your horse?"
"She's a little too placid, all right," Waxillium snapped, climbing up onto the windowsill. "I thought the name might inspire her." He cupped his hand, calling to the boy below.
"Wayne, bring her out here. We're going to jump."
"Like hell we are," Lessie said. "You think there's something magical about a saddle that will keep us from breaking the horse's back when we drop onto it?"
Waxillium hesitated.
"Well, I've read about people doing this."
"Yeah, I've got an idea," Lessie said. "Now why don't you call out Granite Joe and go stand out in the road and have a good old-fashioned showdown at noon?"
"You think that would work?"
"I—" "No, it won't work," she snapped. "Nobody does that. It's stupid. Ruin, how did you kill Paray the Black?"
They stared at each other a moment.
"Well,
Waxillium started.
"Oh, hell. You caught him on the crapper, didn't you?"
Waxillium grinned at her.
"Yeah."
"Did you shoot him in the back, too?"
"As bravely as any man ever shot another in the back."
"Huh. There might be hope for you yet."
He nodded toward the window.
"Jump?"
"Sure. Why not break both my legs before getting shot? Might as well go all in, Mr. Cravat."
"I think we'll be fine, Miss Pink Garter." She raised an eyebrow. "If you're going to identify me by my clothing choices," he said, "then I figure I can do the same."
"It shall never be mentioned again," she said, then took a deep breath. "So?"
He nodded, flaring his medals, preparing to hold on to her and slow them as they fell. Just enough to make it seem like they'd miraculously survived the jump. As he did, however, he noticed one of his blue lines moving, a faint but thick one, pointing across the street.
The window in the mill.
Sunlight glinted off something inside. Waxillium immediately grabbed Lessie and pulled her down. A fraction of a second later, a bullet streaked over their heads and hit the door on the other side of the room.
"Another sharpshooter," she hissed.
"Your power of observation is—"
"Shut it," she said. "Now what?"
Waxillium frowned, considering the question. He glanced at the bullet hole, gauging the trajectory. The sharpshooter had aimed too high. Even if Waxillium hadn't ducked, he'd likely have been all right.
Why aim high?
The moving blue line to the gun had indicated the sharpshooter running to get into position before shooting. Was it just rushed targeting? Or was there a more sinister reason?
"To knock me out of the sky? When I flew out the window?"
He heard footsteps on the stairs, but saw no blue lines. He cursed, scrambling over and peeking out. A group of men were creeping up the steps, and not the normal thugs from below. These men wore tight white shirts, had pencil mustaches, and were armed with crossbows. Not a speck of metal on them.
Rusts.
They knew he was a coin shot, and Granite Joe had a kill squad ready for him. He ducked back into the room and grabbed Lessie by the arm. "Your informant said Granite Joe was in this building?"
"Yeah," she said. "He most certainly is. He likes to be close when a gang is being gathered. He likes to keep an eye on his men."
"This building has a basement."
"So?"
"So, hang on." He grabbed her in both hands and rolled onto the ground, causing her to yelp, then curse. Holding her over him, he increased his weight. He had a great deal of it stored in his metal mind by now, after weeks of siphoning it off. Now he drew it all out, magnifying his weight many-fold in an instant. The wooden floor cracked, then burst open beneath them. Waxillium fell through, his fine clothing getting ripped, and dropped through the air, towing Lassie after him. Eyes squeezed closed, he pushed the hundreds of blue lines behind him, those leading to the nails in the floor below. He blasted them downward to shatter the ground level's floor and open the way into the basement. They crashed through the ground floor in a shower of dust and splinters. Waxillium managed to slow their descent with a steel push, but they still came down hard, smashing into a table in a basement chamber. Waxillium let out a puffing groan, but forced himself to twist around, shaking free of the broken wood. The basement, surprisingly, was paneled in fine hardwoods and lit by lamps shaped like curvaceous women. The table they had hit bore a rich white tablecloth, though it was now wadded in a bunch, the table legs shattered and the table itself at an angle. A man sat at the table's head. Waxillium managed to stand up in the wreckage and level a gun at the fellow, who had a blocky face and dark blue-gray skin, the mark of a man with Kolos heritage. Granite Joe. Waxillium appeared to have interrupted his dinner, judging by the napkin tucked into his collar and the spilled soup on the broken table in front of him. Lassie groaned, rolling over and brushing splinters off her clothing. Her rifle had apparently been left upstairs. Waxillium held his gun in a firm grip as he eyed the two duster-wearing bodyguards behind Granite Joe, a man and a woman, siblings, he'd heard, and crack shots. They'd been surprised by his fall, obviously, for though they'd rested hands on their weapons, they hadn't drawn. Waxillium had the upper hand with the gun on Joe. But if he did shoot, the siblings would kill him in a heartbeat. Perhaps he hadn't thought through this line of attack quite as well as he should have. Joe scraped at the remnants of his broken bowl, framed by splatters of red soup on the tablecloth. He managed to get some onto his spoon and lifted it to his lips.
"You," he said after sipping the soup, "should be dead."
"You might want to look at hiring a new group of thugs," Waxillium said. "The ones upstairs aren't worth much."
"I wasn't referring to them," Joe said. "How long have you been up here in the roughs, making trouble? 2 years?"
"One," Waxillium said. He'd been up here longer, but he had only recently started making trouble, as Joe put it. Granite Joe clicked his tongue.
"You think your type is new up here, son? Wide-eyed, with a low-slung gun belt and bright new spurs? Come to reform us of our uncivilized ways. We see dozens like you every year. The others have the decency to either learn to be bribed or to get dead before they ruin too much. But not you."
He's stalling, Waxillium thought, waiting for the men upstairs to run down.
"Drop your weapons," Waxillium said, holding his gun on Joe. "Drop them or I shoot."
The two guards didn't move. No metal lines on the guard on the right, Waxillium thought, or on Joe himself. The one on the left had a handgun, perhaps trusting the speed of his draw against a coin shot. The other two had fancy hand crossbows in their holsters, he bet. Single shot, made of wood and ceramic, built for killing coin shots. Even with allomancy, Waxillium would never be able to kill all three of them without getting shot himself. Sweat trickled down his temple. He was tempted to just pull his trigger and shoot, but he'd be killed if he did that. And they knew it. It was a standoff, but they had reinforcements coming.
"You don't belong here," Joe said,
leaning forward, elbows on his broken table.
"We came here to escape folks like you, your rules, your assumptions. We don't want you."
"If that were true," Waxillium said, surprised at how level his voice was, "then people wouldn't come to me crying because you killed their sons. You might not need Elendil's laws up here, but that doesn't mean you don't need any laws at all. And it doesn't mean men like you should be able to do whatever you want." Granite Joe shook his head, standing up, hand to his holster.
"This isn't your habitat, son. Everyone has a price up here. If they don't, they don't fit in. You'll die slow and painful just like a lion would die in that city of yours. What I'm doing today, this is a mercy."
Joe drew.
Waxillium reacted quickly, pushing himself off the wall lamps to his right. They were firmly anchored, so his alimentic shove pushed him to the left. He twisted his gun and fired. Joe got his crossbow out and loosed a bolt, but the shot missed, zipping through the air where Waxillium had been. Waxillium's own bullet flew true for once, hitting the female guard who had pulled out her crossbow. She dropped, and as Waxillium crashed into the wall, he pushed, knocking the gun out of the other guard's hand as the man fired. Waxillium's push, unfortunately, also flung his own gun out of his hand, but sent it spinning toward the second bodyguard. His gun smacked the man right in the face, dropping him. Waxillium steadied himself, looking across the room at Joe, who seemed baffled that both his guards were down. No time to think. Waxillium scrambled toward the large, coloss-blooded man. If he could reach some metal to use as a weapon, maybe... A weapon clicked behind him. Waxillium stopped and looked over his shoulder at Lessie, who was pointing a small hand crossbow right at him.
"Everyone up here has a price," Granite Joe said.
Waxillium stared at the crossbow bolt, tipped with obsidian. Where had she been carrying that? He swallowed slowly. "She put herself in danger, scrambling up the stairs with me," he thought. "How could she have been..." But Joe had known about his allomancy. So had she. Lessie knew he could spoil the thug's aim when she'd joined him in running up the steps.
"Finally," Joe said. "Do you have an explanation of why you didn't just shoot him in the saloon room where the barkeep put him?"
She didn't respond, instead studying Waxillium.
"I did warn you that everyone in the saloon was in Joe's employ," she noted.
"I..."
Waxillium swallowed.
"I still think your legs are pretty."
She met his eyes. Then she sighed, turned the crossbow, and shot Granite Joe in the neck. Waxillium blinked as the enormous man dropped to the floor, gurgling as he bled.
"That?" Lessie said, glaring at Waxillium. "That's all you could come up with to win me over? You have nice legs? Seriously? You are so doomed up here, Cravat."
Waxillium breathed out in relief.
"Oh, Harmony. I thought you were going to shoot me for sure."
"Should have," she grumbled. "I can't believe..."
She cut off as the stairs clattered, the troop of miscreants from above having finally gathered the nerve to rush down the stairwell. A good half dozen of them burst into the room with weapons drawn. Lessie dove for the fallen bodyguard's gun. Waxillium thought quickly, then did what came most naturally. He struck a dramatic pose in the rubble, one foot up, Granite Joe dead beside him, both bodyguards felled. Dust from the broken ceiling still sprinkled down, illuminated in sunlight pouring through a window above. The thugs pulled to a stop. They looked down at the fallen corpse of their boss, then gaped at Waxillium. Finally, looking like children who had been caught in the pantry trying to get at the cookies, they lowered their weapons. The ones at the front tried to push through the ones at the back to get away, and the whole clamorous mess of them swarmed back up the steps, leaving the forlorn barkeep, who fled last of all. Waxillium turned and offered his hand to Lessie, who let him pull her to her feet. She looked after the retreating group of bandits, whose boots thumped on wood in their haste to escape. In moments, the building was silent.
"Huh," she said. "You're as surprising as a donkey who can dance, Mr. Cravat."
"It helps to have a thing," Waxillium noted.
"Yeah. You think I should get a thing?"
"Getting a thing has been one of the most important choices I made in coming up to the Roughs."
Lessie nodded slowly.
"I have no idea what we're talking about, but it sounds kind of dirty."
She glanced past him toward Granite Joe's corpse, which stared lifelessly, lying in a pool of his own blood.
"Thanks," Waxillium said, "for not murdering me."
"Eh, I was going to kill him eventually anyway and turn him in for the bounty."
"Yes, well, I doubt you were planning to do it in front of his entire gang while trapped in a basement with no escape."
"True. Right stupid of me, that was."
"So why do it?"
She kept looking at the body.
"I've done plenty of things in Joe's name I wish I hadn't, but as far as I know, I never shot a man who didn't deserve it. Killing you
Well, seems like it would have been killing what you stood for, too. You know?
I think I can grasp the concept. She rubbed at a bleeding scratch on her neck where she'd brushed broken wood during their fall. Next time, though, I hope it won't involve making quite so big a mess. I liked this saloon.
I'll do my best, Waxillium said. I intend to change things out here. If not the whole Ruffs, then at least this town.
Well, Lassie said, walking over to Granite Joe's corpse, I'm sure that if any evil pianos were thinking of attacking the city, they'll have second thoughts now, considering your prowess with that pistol.
Waxillium winced. You saw that, did you?
Rarely seen such a feat, she said, kneeling and going through Joe's pockets. 3 shots, 3 different notes. Not a single bandit down. That takes skill. Maybe you should spend a little less time with your thing and more with your gun.
Now that sounded dirty.
Good. I hate being crass by accident.
She came out with Joe's pocketbook and smiled, tossing it up and catching it. Above, in the hole Waxillium had made, an equine head poked out, followed by a smaller teenage one in an oversized bowler hat. Where had he gotten that? Destroyer blustered in greeting.
Sure. Now you come, Waxillium said. Stupid horse.
Actually, Lassie said, seems to me like staying away from you during a gunfight makes her a pretty damn smart horse.
Waxillium smiled and held out his hand to Lassie. She took it and he pulled her close. Then he lifted them out of the wreckage on a line of blue light. Part 1 17 years later. Winsting smiled to himself as he watched the setting sun. It was an ideal evening to auction himself off.
"We have my safe room ready?" Winsting asked, lightly gripping the balcony banister. "Just in case."
"Yes, my lord."
Flog wore his silly Ruff's hat along with a duster, though he'd never been outside of the Ellendale Basin. The man was an excellent bodyguard, despite his terrible fashion sense, but Winsting made certain to pull on the man's emotions anyway, subtly enhancing Flog's sense of loyalty. One could never be too careful.
"My lord,"
Flog asked, glancing toward the chamber behind them.
"They're all here, my lord. Are you ready?"
Not turning away from the setting sun, Winsting raised a finger to hush the bodyguard. The balcony, in the 4th octant of Ellendale, overlooked the canal and the hub of the city, so he had a nice view of the Field of Rebirth. Long shadows stretched from the statues of the Ascendant Warrior and the Last Emperor in the Green Park, where, according to fanciful legend, their corpses had been discovered following the Great Catasandra and the Final Ascension. The air was muggy, slightly tempered by a cool breeze off Hammondar Bay, a couple of miles to the west. Winsting tapped his fingers on the balcony railing, patiently sending out pulses of alomantic power to shape the emotions of those in the room behind him, or at least any foolish enough not to be wearing their aluminum-lined hats.
"Any moment now?"
Initially appearing as pinprick spots in the air, mist grew before him, spreading like frost across a window. Tendrils stretched and spun about one another, becoming streams, then rivers of motion, currents shifting and blanketing the city, engulfing it, consuming it.
"A misty night," Flog said. "That's bad luck, it is."
"Don't be a fool," Winsting said, adjusting his cravat.
"He's watching us," Flog said. "The mists are his eyes, my lord. Sure as ruin, that is."
"Superstitious nonsense."
Winsting turned and strode into the room. Behind him, Flog shut the doors before the mists could seep into the party. The 2 dozen people, along with the inevitable bodyguards, who mingled and chatted there, were a select group.
not just important, but also very much at odds with one another, despite their deliberate smiles and meaningless small talk. He preferred to have rivals at events like this, let them all see each other, and let each know the cost of losing the contest for his favor. Winsting stepped among them. Unfortunately, many did wear hats whose aluminum linings would protect them from emotional allomancy, though he had personally assured each attendee that none of the others would have soothers or rioters with them. He'd said nothing of his own abilities, of course. So far as any of them knew, he wasn't an allomancer. He glanced across the room to where Blome tended bar. The man shook his head. Nobody else in the room was burning any medals. Excellent. Winsting stepped up to the bar, then turned and raised his hands to draw everyone's attention. The gesture exposed the twinkling diamond cufflinks he wore on his stiff white shirt. The settings were wooden, of course.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he said, "welcome to our little auction. The bidding begins now, and it ends when I hear the offer I like most."
He said nothing more. Too much talk would kill the drama. Winsting took the drink one of his servers offered and stepped out to mingle, then hesitated as he looked over the crowd.
"Edwin Ladrian is not here," he said softly.
He refused to call the man by his silly moniker, Mr. Suit.
"No," Flog said.
"I thought you said everyone had arrived."
"Everyone has said they were coming," Flog said. He shuffled, uncomfortable.
Winsting pursed his lips, but otherwise hid his disappointment. He'd been certain his offer had intrigued Edwin. Perhaps the man had bought out one of the other crime lords in the room. Something to consider. Winsting made his way to the central table, which held the nominal centerpiece of the evening. It was a painting of a reclining woman. Winsting had painted it himself, and he was getting better. The painting was worthless, but the men and women in this room would still offer him huge sums for it. The first one to approach him was Dowser, who ran most of the smuggling operations in the fifth octant. The 3 days of scrub on his cheeks was shadowed by a bowler hat, conspicuously he had not left in the cloakroom. A pretty woman on his arm and a sharp suit did little to clean up a man like Dowser. Winsting wrinkled his nose. Most everyone in the room was a despicable piece of trash, but the others had the decency not to look like it.
"It's ugly as sin," Dowser said, looking over the painting. "I can't believe this is what you're having us bid on. A little cheeky, isn't it?"
"And you'd rather I was completely forthright, Mr. Dowser," Winsting said. "You'd have me proclaim it far and wide, pay me, and in exchange you get my vote in the Senate for the next year?"
Dowser glanced to the sides, as if expecting the constables to burst into the room at any moment. Winsting smiled.
"You'll notice the shades of gray on her cheeks, a representation of the ashen nature of life in a pre-catasundric world, My finest work yet. Do you have an offer to get the bidding started?"
Dowser said nothing. He would eventually make a bid. Each person in this room had spent weeks posturing before agreeing to this meeting. Half were crime lords like Dowser. The others were Winsting's own counterparts, high lords and ladies from prominent noble houses, though no less corrupt than the crime lords.
"Aren't you frightened, Winsting?" asked the woman on Dowser's arm.
Winsting frowned. He didn't recognize her. Slender, with short golden hair and a doe-eyed expression, she was uncommonly tall.
"Frightened, my dear?" Winsting asked. "Of the people in this room?"
"No," she said. "That your brother will find out what you do."
"I assure you," Winsting said. "Replar knows exactly what I am."
"The governor's own brother," the woman said. "Asking for bribes."
"If that truly surprises you, my dear," Winsting said, "then you have lived too sheltered a life.
far bigger fish than I have been sold on this market. When the next catch arrives, perhaps you will see."
That comment caught Dowser's attention. Winston smiled as he saw the gears clicking behind Dowser's eyes.
"Yes," Winston thought, "I did just imply that my brother himself might be open to your bribery.
Perhaps that would up the man's offer." Winston moved over to select some shrimp and quiche from a server's tray.
"The woman with Dowser is a spy," Winston said softly to Flog,
who was always at his elbow.
"Perhaps in constabulary employ."
Flog started.
"My lord, we checked and double-checked each person attending."
"Well, you missed one," Winston whispered. "I'd bet my fortune on it. Follow her after the meeting. If she splits from Dowser for any reason, see that she meets with an accident."
"Yes, my lord."
"And Flog," Winston said, "do be straightforward about it. I won't have you trying to find a place where the mists won't be watching. Understand?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Excellent," Winston said, smiling broadly as he strolled over to Lord Hugh's Entrone,
cousin and confidant to the head of House Entrone. Winston spent an hour mingling, and slowly the bids started to come in. Some of the attendees were reluctant. They would rather have met him one-on-one, making their covert offers, than slipping back into Ellendale's underbelly. Crime lords and nobles alike, these all preferred to dance around a topic, not discuss it openly. But they did bid, and bid well. By the end of his first circuit of the room, Winston had to forcibly contain his excitement. No longer would he have to limit his spending. If his brother could... The gunshot was so unexpected, he at first assumed that one of the servers had broken something. But no, that crack was so sharp, so ear-splitting. He'd never heard a gun fired indoors before. He hadn't known just how stunning it could be. He gaped, the drink tumbling from his fingers as he tried to find the source of the shot. Another followed, then another. It became a storm, various sides firing at one another in a cacophony of death. Before he could cry for help, Flog had him by the arm, towing him toward the stairs down to the safe room. One of his other bodyguards stumbled against the doorway, looking with wide eyes at the blood on his shirt. Winston stared for too long at the dying man before Flog was able to tear him away and shove him into the stairwell.
"What's happening?"
Winston finally demanded as a guard slammed the door behind him and locked it. The bodyguards hurried him down the dim stairway, which was weakly lit by periodic electric lights.
"Who fired? What happened?"
"No way of knowing," Flog said.
Gunfire still sounded above.
"Happened too fast.
Someone just started firing," another guard said.
"Might have been Dowser."
"No, it was Darm,"
another said.
"I heard the first shot from his group."
Either way, it was a disaster. Winston saw his fortune dying a bloody death on the floor above them, and he felt sick as they finally reached the bottom of the stairs and a vault-like door, which Flog pushed him through.
"I'm going to go back up," Flog said. "See what I can salvage. Find out who caused this."
Winston nodded and shut the door, locking it from the inside. He settled into a chair to wait, fretting. The small bunker of a room had wine and other amenities, but he couldn't be bothered. He wrung his hands. What would his brothers say? Rusts, what would the papers say? He'd have to keep this quiet somehow. Eventually, a knock came at the door, and Winston glanced through the peephole to see Flog. Behind him, a small force of bodyguards watched the stairwell. It seemed the gunfire had stopped, though from down here it had sounded only like faint popping. Winston opened the door.
"Well?"
"They're all dead."
"All of them?"
"Every last one,"
Flog said, walking into the room. Winston sat heavily in his chair.
"Maybe that's good,"
he said, searching for some glimmer of light in this dark disaster.
"Nobody can implicate us. Maybe we can just slip away, cover our tracks somehow?"
A daunting task. He owned this building. He'd be connected to these deaths. He'd need an alibi. Hell, he was going to have to go to his brother. This could cost him his seat, even if the general public never discovered what had happened.
He slumped in his chair, frustrated.
Well?
He demanded.
What do you think?
In response, a pair of hands grabbed Winsting by the hair, pulled his head back, and efficiently slit his exposed throat. 2. I figure I should write one of these things, the small book read, to tell my side, not the side the historians will tell for me. I doubt they'll get it right. I don't know that I'd like them to anyhow. Wax tapped the book with the end of his pencil, then scribbled down a note to himself on a loose sheet.
I'm thinking of inviting the Boris brothers to the wedding, Steris said from the couch opposite the one Wax sat upon.
He grunted, still reading. I know Sayes doesn't approve of what I've done, the book continued. But what did he expect me to do, knowing what I know?
The Boris brothers, Steris continued. They're acquaintances of yours, aren't they?
I shot their father, Wax said, not looking up. Twice. I couldn't let it die, the book read. It's not right. Hemology is good now, I figure. Says is both sides now, right? Ruin isn't around anymore.
Are they likely to try to kill you?
Steris asked.
Boris Jr. swore to drink my blood, Wax said. Boris the Third, and yes, he's the brother of Boris Jr., don't ask, swore to, what was it, eat my toes?
He's not a clever man.
We can use it. We should. Shouldn't we?
I'll just put them on the list, then, Steris said.
Wax sighed, looking up from the book.
You're going to invite my mortal enemies, he said dryly, to our wedding.
We have to invite someone, Steris said.
She sat with her blonde hair up in a bun, her stacks of papers for the wedding arrangements settled around her like subjects at court. Her blue-flowered dress was fashionable without being the least bit daring, and her prim hat clung to her hair so tightly it might as well have been nailed in place.
I'm certain there are better choices for invitations than people who want me dead, Wax said.
I hear family members are traditional.
As a point of fact, Steris said, I believe your remaining family members actually do want you dead.
She had him there.
Well, yours don't. Not that I've heard, anyway. If you need to fill out the wedding party, invite more of them.
I've invited all of my family, as would be proper, Steris said, and all of my acquaintances that merit the regard.
She reached to the side, taking out a sheet of paper.
You, however, have given me only 2 names of people to invite. Wayne, and a woman named Renette, who, you noted, probably wouldn't try to shoot you at your own wedding.
Very unlikely, Wax agreed. She hasn't tried to kill me in years. Not seriously, at least.
Steris sighed, setting down the sheet.
Steris, Wax said. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be flippant. Renette will be fine. We joke about her, but she's a good friend. She won't ruin the wedding, I promise.
Then who will?
Excuse me?
I have known you for an entire year now, Lord Waxillium, Steris said. I can accept you for who you are, but I am under no illusions. Something will happen at our wedding. A villain will burst in, guns firing, or will discover explosives in the altar, or Father Bin will inexplicably turn out to be an old enemy and attempt to murder you instead of performing the ceremony. It will happen. I'm merely trying to prepare for it.
You're serious, aren't you? Wax asked, smiling. You're actually thinking of inviting one of my enemies so you can plan for a disruption.
I've sorted them by threat level and ease of access, Steris said, shuffling through her papers.
Wait, Wax said, rising and walking over. He leaned down next to her, looking over her shoulder at her papers. Each sheet contained a detailed biography.
Ape Manton, the Deshear Boys, Rusts, Rick Stranger. I'd forgotten about him. Where did you get these?
Your exploits are a matter of public record, Steris said. One that is of increasing interest to society.
How long did you spend on this? Wax asked, flipping through the pages in the stack.
I wanted to be thorough. This sort of thing helps me think. Besides, I wanted to know what you had spent your life doing.
That was actually kind of sweet, in a bizarre, sterist sort of way. Invite Douglas Venture, he said. He's kind of a friend, but he can't hold his liquor. You can count on him making a disturbance at the after-party.
Excellent, Steris said. And the other 37 seats in your section?
Invite leaders among the seamstresses and forge workers of my house, Wax said. And the constables general of the various octants. It will be a nice gesture.
Very well.
If you want me to help more with the wedding planning...
No, the formal request to perform the ceremony that you sent to Father Bin was the only task required of you by protocol. Otherwise, I can handle it. This is the perfect sort of thing to occupy me. That said, someday I would like to know what is in that little book you peruse so often.
The front door to the mansion slammed open down below, and booted feet thumped up the steps. A moment later, the door to the study burst open, and Wayne all but tumbled in. Darius, the house butler, stood apologetically just behind him. Wiry and of medium height, Wayne had a round, clean-shaven face, and, as usual, wore his old rough's clothing, though Steris had pointedly supplied him with new clothing on at least three occasions. "Wayne, you could try the doorbell sometime," Wax said.
"Nah, that warns the butler,"
Wayne said.
"Which is kind of the point."
"Beady little buggers," Wayne said, shutting the door on Darians.
"Can't trust them. Look, Wax, we've got to go. The marksman has made his move."
Finally, Wax thought. Let me grab my coat. Wayne glanced towards Steris.
Hello, crazy,
he said, nodding to her.
Hello, idiot,
she said, nodding back. Wax buckled on his gun belt over his fine city suit, with vest and cravat, then threw on his mist coat duster. Let's go, he said, checking his ammunition. Wayne pushed his way out the door and barreled down the stairs. Wax paused by Steris's couch.
A man must have his hobbies, she said, raising another sheet of paper and inspecting it. I accept yours, Lord Waxillium, but do try to avoid being shot in the face, as we have wedding portraits to sit for this evening.
I'll remember that.
Keep an eye on my sister out there, Steris said.
This is a dangerous chase, Wax said, hastening to the door. I doubt Maracy will be involved.
If you think that, then your professional faculties are suspect. It's a dangerous chase, so she'll find a way to be involved.
Wax hesitated by the door. He glanced back at her, and she looked up, meeting his eyes. It felt as if there should be something more to their parting. A send-off of some sort. Fondness. Steris seemed to sense it too, but neither said anything. Wax tipped his head back, taking a shot of whiskey and metal flakes, then charged through the doorway and threw himself over the balcony railing. He slowed himself with a push on the silver inlays in the marble floor of the entrance hall, hitting with a thump of boots on stone. Darians opened the front door ahead of him as he raced out to join Wayne at the coach for the ride to... He froze on the steps down to the street.
What the hell is that?
Motor car,
Wayne said from the back seat of the vehicle. Wax groaned, hastening down the steps and approaching the machine. Maracy sat behind the steering mechanism, wearing a fashionable dress of lavender and lace. She looked much younger than her half-sister Steris, though only 5 years separated them. She was a constable now, technically, an aide to the constable general of this octant. She'd never fully explained to him why she would leave behind her career as a solicitor to join the constables, but at least she'd been hired on not as a beat constable, but as an analyst and executive assistant. She shouldn't be subjected to danger in that role. Yet here she was. A glint of eagerness shone in her eyes as she turned to him.
Are you going to get in?
What are you doing here? Wax asked, opening the door with some reluctance.
Driving. You'd rather Wayne do it?
I'd rather have a coach and a good team of horses. Wax settled into one of the seats.
Stop being so old-fashioned, Maracy said, moving her foot and making the devilish contraption lurch forward. Marksmen robbed the First Union, as you guessed.
Wax held on tightly. He'd guessed that marksmen would hit the bank 3 days ago. When it hadn't happened, he'd thought the man had fled to the roughs.
Captain Reddy thinks that Marksman will run for his hideout in the 7th Octant, Marcy noted, steering around a horse carriage.
Reddy is wrong, Wax said. Head for the breakouts. She didn't argue. The motor car thumped and shook until they hit the new section of paving stones, where the street smoothed out and the vehicle picked up speed. This was one of the latest motor cars, the type the broadsheets had been spouting about, with rubber wheels and a gasoline engine. The entire city was transforming to accommodate them. A lot of trouble just so people can drive these contraptions, Wax thought sourly. Horses didn't need ground this smooth, though he did have to admit that the motor car turned remarkably well as Marcy took a corner at speed. It was still a horrible, lifeless heap of destruction.
You shouldn't be here, Wax said as Marcy took another corner.
She kept her eyes forward. Behind them, Wayne leaned halfway out of one of the windows, holding his hat to his head and grinning.
You trained as an attorney, Wax said. You belong in a courtroom, not chasing a killer.
I've done well caring for myself in the past. You never complained then.
Each time it felt like an exception, yet here you are again.
Marcy did something with the stick to her right, changing the motor's gears. Wax never had been able to get the hang of that. She darted around several horses, causing one of the riders to shout after them. The swerving motion pushed Wax against the side of the motor car, and he grunted.
What's wrong with you lately? Marcy demanded. You complain about the motor car, about me being here, about your tea being too hot in the morning. One would almost think you'd made some horrible life decision that you regret deep down. Wonder what it could be.
Wax kept his eyes forward. In the mirror, he saw Wayne lean back in and raise his eyebrows.
She might have a point, mate.
You're not helping.
Wasn't intending to, Wayne said. Fortunately, I know which horrible life decision she's talking about. You really should have bought that hat we looked at last week. It was lucky. I've got a fifth sense for these things.
Fifth?
Marcy asked.
Yeah. Can't smell worth a heap of beans.
There,
Wax said, leaning forward and looking through the windscreen. A figure bounded out of a side street, soaring through the air, landed in the street, then launched himself down the thoroughfare ahead of them.
You were right,
Marcy said.
How did you know?
Marks likes to be seen, Wax said, slipping vindication from her holster at his side. Fancies himself a gentleman rogue. Keep this contraption moving steadily if you can.
Marcy's reply was cut off as Wax threw open the door and leaped out. He fired down and pushed on the bullet, launching himself upward. A push on a passing carriage sent it rocking and nudged Wax to the side so that when he came down, he landed on the wooden roof of Marcy's motor car. He grabbed the roof's front lip in one hand, gun up beside his head, wind blowing his mist coat out behind him. Ahead, Marks bounded down the thoroughfare in a series of steel pushes. Deep within, Wax felt the comforting burn of his own metal. He propelled himself off the motor car and out over the roadway. Marks always performed his robberies in daylight, always escaped along the busiest roadways he could find. He liked the notoriety. He probably felt invincible. Being an allomancer could do that to a man. Wax sent himself into a series of leaps over motor cars and carriages, passing the tenements on either side. The rushing wind, the height and perspective, cleared his mind and calmed his emotions as surely as a soother's touch. His worries dissolved, and for the moment there was only the chase. The marksman wore red, an old busker's mask covering his face, black with white tusks, like a demon of the deepness from old stories. And he was connected to the Set, according to the appointment book Wax had stolen from his uncle. After so many months, the usefulness of that book was waning, but there were still a few gems to exploit. Marks pushed toward the industrial district. Wax followed, bounding from motor car to motor car. Amazing how much more secure he felt while hurtling through the afternoon air, as opposed to being trapped in one of those horrible motorized boxes. Marks spun in midair and released a handful of something. Wax pushed himself off a lamppost and jerked to the side, then shoved Marx's coins as they passed, sending them out of the way of a random motor car below. The motor swerved anyway, running toward the canal, the driver losing control.
Rust and ruin,
Wax thought with annoyance, pushing himself back toward the motor car. He tapped his metal mind, increasing his weight 20-fold, and came down on the hood of the motor car. Hard. The smash crushed the front of the motor car into the ground, grinding it against the stones, slowing and then stopping its momentum before it could topple into the canal. He caught a glimpse of stunned people inside, then released his metal mind and launched himself in a push after Marx. He almost lost the man, but fortunately the red clothing was distinctive. Wax spotted him as he bounded up off a low building, then pushed himself high along the side of one of the city's shorter skyscrapers. Wax followed, watching as the man pushed himself in through a window on the top floor, some 12 or 14 stories up. Wax shot up into the sky, windows passing him in a blur. The city of Ellendale stretched out all around, smoke rising from coal plants, factories, and homes in countless spouts. He neared the top floor, one window to the left of where Marx had entered, and as he landed lightly on the stonework ledge, he tossed a coin toward the window Marx had used. The coin bounced against the glass. Gunfire sprayed out of the window. At the same time, Wax increased his weight and smashed through his own window by leaning against it, entering the building. He skidded on glass, raising Vindication toward the plaster wall separating him from Marx. Translucent blue lines spread around him, pointing in 1,000 different directions, highlighting bits of metal. The nails in a desk behind him were a frightened man in a suit cowered, the metal wires in the walls leading to electric lamps. Most importantly, a few lines pointed through the wall into the next room. These were faint. Obstructions weakened his allomantic sense. One of those lines quivered as someone in there turned and raised a gun. Wax rolled Vindication's cylinder and locked it into place. Haze killer round. He fired, then pushed, flaring his metal and drilling that bullet forward with as much force as he could. It tore through the wall as if it were paper. The metal in the next room dropped to the floor. Wax threw himself against the wall, increasing his weight, cracking the plaster. Another slam with his shoulder smashed through, and he broke into the next room, weapon raised, looking for his target. He found only a pool of blood soaking into the carpet and a discarded submachine gun. This room was some kind of clerk's office. Several men and women pressed against the floor, trembling. One woman raised a finger, pointing out a door. Wax gave her a nod and crouched against the wall next to the doorway, then cautiously glanced out. With a painful grating sound, a filing cabinet slid down the hallway toward him. Wax ducked back out of the way as it passed, then leaped out and aimed. His gun immediately lurched backward. Wax grabbed it with both hands, holding tight, but a second push launched his other pistol out of its holster. His feet started to skid, his gun hauling him backward, and he growled, but finally dropped Vindication. She tumbled all the way down the hall to fetch up beside the ruins of the filing cabinet, which had crashed into the wall there. He would have to come back for her once this was over. Marx stood at the other end of the hallway, lit by soft electric lights. He bled from a shoulder wound, his face hidden by the black and white mask.
"There are 1,000 criminals in this city far worse than I am," a muffled voice said from behind the mask. "And yet you hunt me, lawman. Why? I'm a hero of the people."
"You stopped being a hero weeks ago," Wax said, striding forward, mistcoat rustling, "when you killed a child."
"That wasn't my fault."
"You fired the gun, Marx. You might not have been aiming for the girl, but you fired the gun."
The thief stepped back. The sack slung on his shoulder had been torn, either by Wax's bullet or some shrapnel. It leaked banknotes. Marx glared at him through the mask, eyes barely visible in the electric light. Then he dashed to the side, holding his shoulder as he ran into another room. Wax pushed off the filing cabinet and threw himself in a rush down the hallway. He skidded to a stop before the door Marx had gone in, then pushed off the light behind, bending it against the wall and entering the room. Open window. Wax grabbed a handful of pens from a desk before throwing himself out of the window, 12 stories up. Banknotes fluttered in the air, trailing behind Marx as he plummeted. Wax increased his weight, trying to fall faster, but he had nothing to push against, and the increased weight helped only slightly against air resistance. Marx still hit the ground before him, then pushed away the coin he'd used to slow himself. A pair of dropped pens, with metal nibs, pushed ahead of himself into the ground was enough, barely, to slow Wax. Marx leaped away, bounding out over some street lamps. He bore no metal on his body that Max could spot, but he moved a lot more slowly than he had earlier, and he trailed blood. Wax followed him. Marx would be making for the breakouts, a slum where the people still covered for him. They didn't care that his robberies had turned violent. They celebrated that he stole from those who deserved it. Can't let him reach that safety, Wax thought, pushing himself up over a lamppost, then shoving on it behind him to gain speed. He closed on his prey, who checked on Wax with a frantic glance over his shoulder. Wax raised one of the pens, gauging how risky it would be to try to hit Marks in the leg. He didn't want a killing blow. This man knew something. The slums were just ahead. Next bound, Wax thought, gripping the pen. Bystanders stared up from the sidewalks, watching the allomantic chase. He couldn't risk hitting one of them. He had to. One of those faces was familiar. Wax lost control of his push. Stunned by what he'd seen, he barely kept himself from breaking bones as he hit the street, rolling across cobbles. He came to a rest, mistcoat tassels twisted around his body. He drew himself up on hands and knees.
No. Impossible. No.
He scrambled across the street, ignoring a stomping black drestrier and its cursing rider.
That face. That face.
The last time he had seen that face, he had shot it in the forehead.
Bloody tan.
The man who had killed Lessie.
A man was here,
Wax shouted, shoving through the crowd.
Long-fingered, thinning hair. A face almost like a bare skull. Did you see him? Did anyone see him?
People stared at him as if he were daft. Perhaps he was. Wax raised his hand to the side of his head.
Lord Waxillium?
He spun. Marcy had stopped her motor car nearby, and both she and Wayne were climbing out. Had she actually been able to tail him during his chase? No. No, he'd told her where he thought Marks would go.
Wax, mate? Wayne asked. You all right? What did he do, knock you from the air?
Something like that, Wax mumbled, glancing about one last time.
Rusts, he thought. The stress is digging into my mind.
So he got away,
Marcy said, folding her arms, looking displeased.
Not yet, he didn't, Wax said. He's bleeding and dropping money. He'll leave a trail. Come on.
3.
I need you to stay behind as we go into those slums, Wayne said, determined to impress solemnity into his voice. It's not that I don't want your help. I do. It's just going to be too dangerous for you. You need to stay where I know you're safe. No arguments. I'm sorry.
Wayne, Wax said, walking past,
stop talking to your hat and get over here.
Wayne sighed, patting his hat and then forcing himself to put it down and leave it in the motor car.
Wax was a right good fellow, but there were a lot of things he didn't understand. Women, for one. Hats, for another.
Wayne jogged over to where Wax and Marcy peered into the breakouts. It seemed a different world in there. The sky inside was strung with clotheslines, derelict bits of clothing dangling like hanged men. Wind blew out of the place, happy to escape, carrying with it uncertain scents. Food half-cooked, bodies half-washed, streets half-cleaned. The tall, compact tenements cast deep shadows even in the afternoon. As if this were the place, dusk came for a drink and a chat before sauntering out for its evening duty.
The Lord Mistborn didn't want there to be slums in the city, you know,
Marcy said as the three of them entered.
He tried hard to prevent them from growing up. Built nice buildings for the poor. Tried to make them last.
Wax nodded, absently moving a coin across his knuckles as he walked. He seemed to have lost his guns somewhere. Had he bummed some coins off Marcy? It never was fair. When Wayne borrowed coins off folks, he got yelled at. He did forget to ask sometimes, but he always offered a good trade. As they penetrated deeper into the breakouts, Wayne lagged behind the other two.
Need a good hat, he thought.
A hat was important. So he listened for some coughing.
Ah.
He found the chap nestled up beside a doorway, a ratty blanket draped over his knees. You could always find his type in a slum. Old, clinging to life like a man on a ledge, his lungs half full with various unsavory fluids. The old man hacked into a glove-wrapped hand as Wayne settled down on the steps beside him.
What, no?
The man said.
Who are you? What no?
Wayne repeated.
Who are you?
I'm nobody,
the man said, then spat to the side.
Dirty odor. I ain't done nothing. I'm nobody,
Wayne repeated, taking his flask from the pocket of his duster.
Dirty odor. I ain't done nothing.
Good accent, that was. Real mumbly, a classic vintage, wrapped in a blanket of history. Closing his eyes and listening, Wayne thought he could imagine what people sounded like years ago. He held out the flask of whiskey.
You trying to poison me?
The man asked. He clipped off words, left out half the sounds.
You trying to poison me?
Wayne repeated, working his jaw as if his mouth were full of bits of rock he kept trying to chew. Some northern fields mix in this one for sure. He opened his eyes and tipped the whiskey at the man who smelled it, then took a sip, then a swig, then a gulp.
So,
the man asked,
you're an idiot. I've a son that's an idiot. A real kind, that was born that way. Well, you seem all right anyway. Well, you seem all right anyway,
Wayne said, standing up. He reached over to take the man's old cotton cap off his head, then gestured toward the whiskey flask.
In trade?
The man asked.
Boy, you are an idiot.
Wayne pulled on the cap.
Could you say another word that starts with H for me?
Huh?
Rusting wonderful, Wayne said.
He hopped back down the steps onto the street and ditched his duster in a cranny, and along with it his dueling canes, unfortunately. He kept his wooden knuckle bones, though. The clothing underneath his duster was rough's stock, not so different from what they wore in these slums. Buttoned shirt, trousers, suspenders. He rolled up the sleeves as he walked. The clothing was worn, patched in a few places. He wouldn't trade it for the world. Took years to get clothing that looked right. Used. Lived in. Be slow to trust a man with clothing that was too new. You didn't get to wear new, clean clothing by doing honest work. Wax and Maracy had paused up ahead, speaking to some old women with scarves on their heads and bundles in their arms. Wayne could almost hear what they were saying.
We don't know nothing.
He came running past here mere moments ago, Wax would say. Surely you—
We don't know nothing. We didn't see nothing.
Wayne wandered over to where a group of men sat under a dirty cloth awning while eating bruised fruit.
Who are those outers?
Wayne asked as he sat down, using the accent he'd just picked up from the old man. They didn't even question him. A slum like this had a lot of people, too many to know everyone, but you could easily tell if someone belonged or not. And Wayne belonged.
Connors for sure,
one of the men said. He had a head like an overturned bowl, hairless and too flat.
They want someone,
another man said. Rust and ruin, the chap's face was so pointy you could have used it to plow a field.
Connors only come here if they want to arrest someone. They've never cared about us and never will. If they did care,
Bowlhead said,
they'd do something about all those factories and power plants dumping ash on us. We ain't supposed to live in ash anymore. Harmony said it, he did.
Wayne nodded. Good point, that. These building walls, they were ashen. Did people care about that, on the outside? No. Not as long as they didn't have to live in here. He didn't miss the glares Wax and Maracy drew, pointed at them by people who passed behind or who pulled windows closed up above. This is worse, Wayne thought. Worse than normal. He'd have to talk to Wax about it. But for now, there was a job to do.
They are looking for something.
Stay out of it,
Bullhead said. Wayne grunted.
Maybe there's money in it. You turn in one of our own,
Bullhead said with a scowl.
I recognize you. Edip's son, aren't you?
Wayne glanced away, noncommittal.
You listen here, son,
Bullhead said, wagging his finger.
Don't cross the corner, and don't be a rat. I ain't a rat,
Wayne said testily. He wasn't. But sometimes a man just needed cash.
They're after marks. I overheard him. There's 1,000 notes on his head, there is. They grow up here,
Powface said.
He's one of us.
He killed that girl,
Wayne said.
That's a lie,
Bullhead said.
Don't you go talking to Connors, son. I mean it.
Fine, fine,
Wayne said, moving to rise.
I'll just go. You'll sit back down,
Bullhead said,
or I'll wrap you something good on your head, I will.
Wayne sighed, sitting back down.
You olders always talk about us, and don't know how it is these days, working in one of the factories. We know more than you think,
Bullhead said, handing Wayne a bruised apple.
Eat this. Stay out of trouble, and don't go where I can't see you.
Wayne grumbled, but sat back and bit into the apple. It didn't taste half bad. He ate the whole thing, then helped himself to a couple more. It happened soon enough. The men of the fruit-eating group broke apart, leaving Wayne with a basket full of cores. They split with a few amicable jibes at one another, each of the four men claiming he had some important task to be about. Wayne stuffed another apple in each pocket, then stood up and sauntered off after Bullhead. He tailed the fellow fairly easily, nodding occasionally at people who nodded back as if they knew him. It was the hat. Put on a man's hat, surround your mind with his way of thinking, and it changed you. A man in dock worker's clothing passed by, shoulders slumped, whistling a sad tune. Wayne picked up the melody. Rough life that was, working the docks. You had to commute each day on the canal boats. Either that or find a bed out near the waterfront of the bay, where you were about as likely to get stabbed as at breakfast. He'd lived that life as a youth, had the scars to prove it, he did. But as a chap grew, he wanted more to his days than a fight on every corner and women who couldn't remember his name one day to the next. Bullhead ducked into an alley. Well, every rusting street in here felt like an alley. Bullhead entered an alley's alley. Wayne stepped up to the side of the tiny roadway, then burned bend alloy. Allomancy was a useful trick, that it was. Burning the metal set up a nice little bubble of sped-up time around him. He strolled around the corner, staying inside the bubble. It didn't move when he did, but he could move within it. Yep, there he was, Bullhead himself, crouching beside a rubbish pile, waiting to see if anyone followed him. Wayne had almost made the bubble too big and caught the man in it. Sloppy, sloppy, Wayne thought. A mistake like that on the docks could cost a man his life. He fished a ratty blanket out of the part of the rubbish pile that was inside his bubble, then wandered back around the corner and dropped the bubble. Inside the speed bubble, he'd have been moving so quickly Bullhead wouldn't have seen more than a blur, if that. He wouldn't think anything of it, Wayne was certain. If he were wrong, he'd eat his hat. Well, one of Wax's hats, at least. Wayne found a set of steps and settled down. He pulled his cap down half over his eyes, sidled up to the wall in a comfortable position, and spread the blanket around himself. Just another homeless drunk. Bullhead was a careful one. He waited inside the alley a whole 5 minutes before creeping out, looking back and forth, then hastening to a building across the street. He knocked, whispered something, and was let in. Wayne yawned, stretched, and tossed aside the blanket. He crossed the street to the building that Bullhead had entered, then started checking the shuttered windows. The ancient shutters were so old, a good sneeze might have knocked them off. He had to be careful to avoid getting splinters in his cheeks as he listened at each window in turn. The men of the slums had an odd sense of morality to them. They wouldn't turn in one of their own to the constables, not even for a reward. But then again, a chap needed to eat. Wouldn't a man like Marks want to hear just how loyal his friends were?
"Was a pair of Connors for sure,"
Wayne heard at a window.
"A 1,000 notes is a lot, Marks. A whole lot. Now, I'm not saying you can't trust the lads. There's not a bad alloy in the bunch. I can say that a little encouragement will help them feel better about their loyalty."
Ratting out a friend? Completely off limits. Extorting a friend? Well, that was just good business sense. And if Marks didn't act grateful, then maybe he hadn't been a friend after all.
Wayne grinned, slipping his sets of wooden knuckle bones over his fingers. He stepped back, then charged the building. He hit the shutters with one shoulder, crashing through, then tossed up a speed bubble the moment he hit the floor. He rolled and came up on his feet in front of Marks, who was inside the speed bubble. The man still wore his red trousers, though he'd removed his mask and was bandaging his shoulder. He snapped his head up, displaying a surprised face with bushy eyebrows and large lips. Rusts. No wonder the fellow normally wore a mask. Wayne swung at his chin, laying him out with one punch. Then he spun, fists up, but the other half-dozen occupants of the room, including Bowlhead, stood frozen just outside the edge of his speed bubble. Now that was right lucky. Wayne grinned, heaving Marks up onto his shoulder. He took his knuckles off, slipping them into his pocket, and got out an apple. He took a juicy bite, waved farewell to Bowlhead, who looked forward with glassy eyes, frozen, then tossed Marks out the window and followed after. Once he passed beyond the edge of his speed bubble, it automatically collapsed.
"What the hell was that?"
Bowlhead yelled inside. Wayne heaved the unconscious Marks up onto his shoulder again, then wandered back down the road, chewing on his apple.
"Let me talk to the next ones," Marcy said. "Maybe I can get them to say something."
She felt Waxillium's eyes on her. He thought she was trying to prove himself to him. Once he'd have been right. Now she was a constable, fully credentialed and in the city's employ. This was her job. Waxillium didn't agree with her decision, but her actions were not subject to his approval. Together, they walked up to a group of young outcasts sitting on the steps of the slums. The three boys watched them with suspicion, their skin dirty, their too big clothing tied at the waists and ankles. That was the style, apparently, for youths of the streets. They smelled of the incense they'd been smoking in their pipes. Marcy stepped up to them.
"We're looking for a man."
"If you need a man," one of the boys said, looking her up and down.
"I'm right here."
"Oh, please,"
Marcy said.
"You're what, 9?
"Hey, she knows how long it is,"
the boy said, laughing and grabbing his crotch.
"Have you been peeking at me, lady?"
Well, that's a blush, Marcy thought. Not terribly professional.
Fortunately, she'd spent time around Wayne and his occasional colorful metaphors. Blushes would happen. She pressed onward.
"He came shooting through here less than an hour ago. Wounded, trailing blood, wearing red. I'm sure you know who I'm speaking of."
"Yeah, the man of ours,"
one of the boys said, laughing and referencing a figure from old nursemaid tales.
"I know him."
Treat them like a belligerent witness, she thought. At a trial. Keep them talking.
She needed to learn how to deal with people like these boys in the real world, not just in sterile practice rooms.
"Yes, the man of ours,"
Marcy said.
"Where did he go?"
"To the edge of dusk,"
the boy said.
"Haven't you heard the stories?"
"I'm fond of stories,"
Marcy said, slipping a few coins from her pocketbook. She held them up. Bribery felt like cheating, but, well, she wasn't in court. The three boys eyed the coins, a sudden hunger flashing in their eyes. They covered it quickly, but perhaps showing off money in this place wasn't terribly wise.
"Let's hear a story,"
Marcy said.
"About where this man of ours might be staying. The location of dusk, if you will. Here in these tenements."
"We might know that,"
one of the boys said.
"Though, you know, stories cost a lot. More than that."
Behind her, something clinked. Waxillium had gotten out a few coins, too. The boys glanced at those, eager, until Waxillium flipped one up into the air and pushed until it was lost. The boys grew quiet immediately. "Talk to the lady," Waxillium said softly, with an edge to his voice. "Stop wasting our time." Marcy turned to him, and behind her the boys made their decision. They scattered, obviously not wanting to deal with an allomancer.
"That was very helpful,"
Marcy said, folding her arms.
"Thank you so much."
"They were going to lie to you," Waxillium said, glancing over his shoulder. "And we were drawing the wrong kind of attention."
I realized they were going to lie, Maracy said. I was going to catch them in it. Attacking someone's false story is often one of the best methods of interrogation.
Actually, Waxillium said, the best method of interrogation involves a drawer and someone's fingers.
Actually, Maracy said, it does not. Studies show that forced interrogation results in bad information almost all the time. Anyway, what is wrong with you today, Waxillium? I realize you've been flaunting your tough, rough lawman persona lately.
I have not.
You have, she said. And I can see why. Out in the roughs, you acted the gentleman lawman. You yourself told me you clung to civilization to bring it with you. Well, here you're around lords all the time. You're practically drowning in civilization. So instead, you lean on being the roughs lawman to bring a little old-fashioned justice to the city.
You've thought about this a lot, he said, turned away from her, scanning the street.
Rust and ruin. He thought she was infatuated with him. Arrogant, brutish, idiot.
She puffed out and stalked away. She was not infatuated. He had made it clear there would be nothing between them, and he was engaged to her sister. That was that. Couldn't the two of them have a professional relationship now? Wayne lounged on the steps leading up to a nearby building, watching them and sloppily taking bites out of an apple.
And where have you been? Maracy asked, walking up to him.
Apple, Wayne said, handing another one toward her. He's not too bruised.
No, thank you. Some of us have been trying to find a killer, not a meal.
Oh, that.
Wayne kicked at something beside him on the ground, hidden in the shadow of the steps.
Yeah, took care of that for you.
You took... Wayne, that's a person at your feet. Rusts, he's bleeding.
Sure is, Wayne said. Not my fault at all, that. I did knock him upside the head, though.
Maracy raised a hand to her mouth.
It was him. Wayne, where... how...
Waxillium gently pushed her aside. She hadn't seen him approach. He knelt down, checking Marx's wound. Waxillium then looked up at Wayne and nodded, the two sharing an expression they often exchanged. The closest Maracy had been able to figure, it meant something between nice work and, you're a total git, I wanted to do that.
Let's get him to the constabulary offices, Waxillium said, lifting the unconscious Marx.
Yes, fine, Maracy said. But aren't you going to ask how he did this? Where he's been?
Wayne has his methods, Waxillium said. In a place like this, they're far better than my own.
You knew,
she said, leveling a finger at Waxillium.
You knew we weren't going to get anywhere asking questions.
I suspected, Waxillium said. But Wayne needs space to try his methods, on account of my being so incredible, Wayne added. So I did my best to find Marx on my own, on account of him being unable to accept that I'm better at this sort of thing than he is, in case Wayne failed, which never happens.
Wayne grinned and took a bite of his apple, hopping off his steps to walk beside Waxillium.
Except that one time, and that other one time, but those don't matter, on account of my getting hit to the head enough times that I can't remember them.
Maracy sighed inwardly, falling into step with the two. They had so much history that they moved in concert subconsciously, like two dancers who had performed together countless times. That made life particularly difficult for the newcomer who tried to perform with them.
Well, Maracy said to Wayne, you could at least tell me what you did. Perhaps I could learn from your methods.
Nah, Wayne said. Won't work for you. You're too pretty. In an unpretty sort of way to me, mind you. Let's not go around that tree again.
Wayne, sometimes you completely baffle me.
Only sometimes? Waxillium asked.
I can't give her all I got, mate, Wayne said, thumbs behind his suspenders. Gotta save some for everyone else. I dole it out with no respect for privilege, class, sex, or mental capacity. I'm a Roston saint, I am.
But how? Maracy said. How did you find him? Did you make some of these people talk?
Nah, Wayne said. I made them not talk. They're better at that. Comes from practice, I suspect.
You should take lessons, Waxillium added.
Marcy sighed as they approached the entrance to the breakouts. The human flotsam, who earlier had cluttered the stairwells and alleyways in here, had melted away, perhaps finding the attention of several lawmen too discomforting. It, Waxillium stiffened, Wayne did as well.
What?
Marcy began, right as Waxillium dropped Marks and reached for his mistcoat pocket. Wayne shoved his shoulder into Marcy, pushing her away as something zipped down out of the air and clacked against the paving stones where they had been standing. More projectiles followed, though